Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and joining me as always is Mike.
Hey everyone, it is great to be here for episode 368. Today we are looking back at the top trending stories from yesterday, April 16th, 2026. And Sarah, looking at the docket today, it is an incredibly AI-heavy day.
It really is. It feels like the entire front page was dominated by massive model releases, shifting developer ecosystems, and some pretty deep existential questions about where all this technology is actually taking us. We've got Anthropic dropping Claude Opus 4.7, an open source heavy hitter from Alibaba with Qwen 3.6, a massive update to OpenAI's Codex, some serious drama in the local LLM space regarding Llama, and finally, a really sobering essay from Affier about the future of the internet.
Let us jump right into the biggest release of the day. Anthropic announced Claude Opus 4.7, and this shot straight to the top of Hacker News with over 1,500 points. The official announcement positions this as a major leap for advanced software engineering, especially for complex, long-running tasks.
Right. Anthropic is claiming that developers can now hand off their hardest coding work to Opus 4.7 with confidence. They're saying it handles asynchronous workflows, CI/CD pipelines, and multi-step automations with way more rigor than Opus 4.6. It even apparently writes its own tests to verify its output before reporting back to you. And they kept the pricing exactly the same as 4.6, which is $5 per million input tokens.
But if you dive into the Hacker News comments, the reality on the ground seems a bit more complicated, specifically around a feature called adaptive thinking. Simon Williamson, who is always a great follow for this stuff, pointed out that the new adaptive thinking mode is actually really confusing. Anthropic made it the default, and it decides on its own how much compute or thinking effort to apply to a prompt.
And the community is finding that the model often chooses not to think when it really should. A user named James Swift mentioned he had to file a bug report because Opus 4.7 was acting dumber than the previous version. He had to manually disable adaptive thinking and force the thinking effort to high just to get back to the baseline performance he was used to.
It is a classic router problem, right? We saw this back when GPT-5 came out. Estimating how hard a problem is before you actually solve it is incredibly difficult. One commenter compared it to assigning Jira points to a task, which is notoriously inaccurate, even for humans. But the real frustration in the thread is that developers are paying direct API pricing for a black box that keeps shifting under their feet. One user spent 20 minutes hunting down a memory leak that the model cheerfully warned him about, only to realize the model completely hallucinated the bug.
Yeah, the honeymoon phase of just being amazed that the AI can code at all is definitely over. Now we are in the phase where reliability and consistency are what actually matter to engineers, which perfectly segues into our next story. Because while Anthropic is tweaking its proprietary models, the open weights ecosystem is moving incredibly fast. The second top story with almost 1,000 points is the release of Qwen 3.6 35B A3B.
This is the new agentic coding model from Alibaba, and it is now open to all. And what is wild is that people are already running this locally on their laptops. We actually have another appearance by Simon Willison in the comments here. He ran the heavily quantized version of this model on his back and used his famous Pelican riding a bicycle prompt.
For our listeners who might not know, the Pelican riding a bicycle prompt is a brilliant little test Simon came up with. The idea is to ask the model to generate an SVG image of something so weird and specific that it could not possibly have memorized it from its training data. It tests the model's actual understanding of spatial relationships and code generation.
Exactly. And Simon reported that this local Qwen model actually drew a better Pelican riding a bicycle than Claude Opus 4.7 did. Now, other commenters tried to reproduce this and got mixed results. Some got a flamingo instead, or a bicycle with missing spokes. But the fact that a 35 billion parameter model running locally on a laptop is even in the same league as Anthropic's flagship model for a zero-shot coding task is just mind-blowing.
It really shows how the gap between closed frontier models and open weights is closing. Though, as one commenter pointed out, the big closed models still dominate on massive multi-file enterprise code bases. But for hobbyists or for companies with strict data privacy needs who have to run things locally, models like Qwen 3.6 are becoming incredibly viable daily drivers.
Speaking of daily drivers, OpenAI is not sitting still. Our third story, with 742 points, is OpenAI's announcement of Codex for almost everything. They're releasing a major update to the Codex desktop app that basically allows it to operate your computer alongside you. It can see your screen, click, type, and use apps that do not even have APIs.
They also added over 90 new plugins for things like Jira, GitLab, and Databricks, plus a memory feature so it remembers your personal preferences across sessions. It can even wake up automatically to continue long-term tasks. But Mike, the Hacker News reaction to this was fascinating. The top comment by Woarua basically said, "Wait, Claude Desktop already does all of this. Codex is not pioneering here, it is just catching up."
Yeah, the sentiment is definitely that Anthropic has been eating OpenAI's lunch in the coding agent space for a while now. But the discussion quickly turned to the economics of all this. A user named Solenoid0937 pointed out that Anthropic recently had to lower rate limits for individuals because of compute constraints. OpenAI, on the other hand, has massive enterprise backing and can afford to subsidize compute to win developers back.
It is the classic venture capital subsidized phase of a new market. We are all getting access to tens of thousands of dollars worth of compute for $20 a month because these giants are fighting for market share. One retired developer in the comments noted that vibe coding has been a fun hobby, but as the true cost of this compute eventually gets passed down to the consumer, we are going to see a massive shakeout and who actually keeps paying for these tools.
I think that is a perfect transition to our fourth story, which is all about the tools we use to run these models locally. This was a really spicy opinion piece by Zetaphor titled "Friends Do Not Let Friends Use a Llama." It racked up 610 points and sparked a massive debate about open source ethics and user experience.
For context, a Llama has been the absolute go-to tool for running local LLMs for the past couple of years. It is famous for its dead simple one-click install process, but Zetaphor's article is a brutal takedown of the project. The main accusation is that a Llama built its entire reputation and raised venture capital by wrapping Georgi Drakhanov's Llama CPP project, but spent years actively hiding that fact.
Right. The article points out that for over a year, a Llama's documentation had zero mention of Llama CPP, and they even stripped the required MIT license notices from their binaries. When the community finally forced them to out a credit, it was just a single line buried at the bottom of the README. And then, when a Llama finally tried to build their own custom backend to distance themselves, they introduced a ton of bugs in performance regressions that Llama CPP had solved years ago.
The article also calls them out for misleading users during the DeepSeek R1 craze. DeepSeek released a bunch of smaller, distilled models based on Qwen, but a Llama just labeled them all as DeepSeek R1 in their app. So you had all these people on Twitter bragging that they were running a 600 billion parameter model on their MacBook when they were actually just running an 8 billion parameter distilled version. Zetaphor argues this did actual reputational damage to DeepSeek because people thought the real model was hallucinating or performing poorly.
And then there is the model file issue. The whole point of the GGUF format was to have one single file that contains the model weights, the chat template, and the stop tokens. But a Llama forced everyone to use this Dockerfile style configuration system that often breaks the native chat templates. If you want to change the temperature of a model in a Llama, you sometimes have to copy a 40 gigabyte file just to change one parameter.
The Hacker News comments were really divided on this one. On one side, you have the purists who completely agree with the article. They recommend alternatives like LM Studio or just using vanilla Llama CPP. But on the other side, you have users pointing out that a Llama won for a reason. It solved the user experience problem. As one commenter said, people do not want to compile C++ or figure out command line flags. They just want to open their terminal, type a Llama run, and start chatting.
It is the eternal battle in software engineering between doing things the technically pure way and building the best user experience. Though, as some commenters pointed out, the vanilla Llama CPP project actually has a really good web interface built in now, so the UX gap is definitely closing.
Okay, let us take a deep breath and zoom out for our final story today. This is an essay by the well-known distributed systems researcher Effer, titled "The Future of Everything is Lies, I Guess. Where Do We Go From Here?" It got 539 points, and honestly, Mike, it is one of the most sobering pieces of writing I have read on Hacker News in a long time.
It really is. Effer is essentially looking at the current state of generative AI and saying, "I am profoundly tired of this." He talks about how the internet is filling up with slop. Search results are useless, customer service chatbots are lying to him, LLM scrapers are taking down independent websites, and the electric company is hiking rates to pay for the data centers powering all of this.
He makes a really powerful historical comparison to the personal automobile.
We all know cars are fast and convenient, but Afra points out that cars also bulldozed communities, created ex-urban sprawl, gave everyone lead poisoning, and reduced human social contact. He is asking us to look at AI through that same lens. What is the long-term structural damage we are doing to society just to make coding a little faster or writing emails a little easier?
And his personal response to this is total refusal. He refuses to use LLMs for writing or coding. He says that using AI assistance denies us the muscle memory and the deep theory building that comes from struggling through a task by hand. He's urging developers to stop pushing this tech debt onto the world, to unionize against mandatory copilot usage, and to demand aggressive regulation on AI carbon emissions.
The discussion on Hacker News was incredibly deep. A lot of people really resonated with the feeling of exhaustion, but the top comment by Animats took the conversation in a fascinating historical direction. Animats pointed out that for the lifetime of everyone alive today, skills like reading, thinking, and writing have been the primary vehicles for upward mobility in society. But historically speaking, that is an anomaly.
Right. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, there were way more smart people than there were jobs that actually required deep thinking. It wasn't until the post-World War II college boom that cognitive labor became the ultimate scarce resource. Animats suggested that if AI successfully automates thinking and writing, society might revert to its historical baseline, where the things we value are physical robustness, strength, or even just birth order and inherited wealth.
That is such a bleak thought. If the nerds are no longer the ones generating the most economic value, what happens to the tech industry? Another commenter pushed back on this, saying, "We are not prisoners of history. We don't have to go back to being serfs for the few people who own the data centers and the energy grid." But they acknowledge that avoiding that fate is going to take a massive, conscious effort to reorganize society.
It is a heavy note to end on, but I think it's a necessary conversation. We spend so much time on this show talking about benchmark scores and context windows, but Afra's post is a great reminder that all of this code actually runs in the real world, and it impacts real human beings.
Absolutely. It is the perfect balance to the hype cycle. Well, that is all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into the state of AI, open source drama, and the future of the web.
If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will be right back here tomorrow to break down whatever the Hacker News community is talking about next. Until then, I am Mike.
And I am Sarah. Have a great day, everyone.